Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer's Patrick Antonetti. We'll call this a mini podcast because it's not going to be as long as, certainly not as long as the last podcast I did with Sue Bird. But it is a guest, of course, who's been on this podcast many times and has been part of the mini podcast experience. It is Austin Karp, the Sports Business Journal managing editor slash digital. Also, now an established podcast host, as he is fronting their Sports Media Podcast. Welcome, Austin Karp.
Big air quotes on that established, Richard. I got a long way to catch up to you.
Well, I'm not sure the truth is in the advertising. All right, I'm actually going to start off with your podcast, Austin, then we'll get into some quick topics.
Sure.
So obviously, John Oran has moved to Puck. Andrew Marchand has now moved to The Athletic to be my colleague, which obviously both those guys the best. It's been great to have Marchand here. I expect John to do great work at Puck. He already is. But what is really great is that this podcast continues, and I would put you in the host role. And so sometimes, like, you'll have other colleagues from SBJ on, and also a lot of, like, what I do, you'll bring somebody from the broader industry on and to do an interview. So clearly the podcast will continue. Like, how do you see it right now? I don't know if you're going to do it obviously forever, but in terms of where, because obviously there's a lot of crossover between my podcast and that one. So for listeners who listen to both, where, at least in the short term, is the one that you're hosting going to go?
Well, we're going to obviously stay very focused on what our bread and butter is, sports business and sports media in particular. But, you know, maybe you can see us branch out a little more. And, you know, like you said earlier, like, I have nothing but all the respect and love in the world from Andrew Marchand and John Oran. They were always great to work with. They brought me on and they had an incredible relationship and their podcast was fun. So we want to try to keep as many of the, you know, smart talk elements and really lean into what SBJ has been doing for close to 30 years, like giving you an insider's look into sports business. And we've done that with some producers. We've done it with some talent. And, you know, like, you know, in producing a podcast, it's work to keep it going. But it's fun. It's been interesting to get to know some of these folks that I haven't really had one-on-one talks with before. You know, I've known Steve Phelps and we've talked before, but I've never talked to Taylor Twellman before. And it was really cool to have him on. And he was such an easygoing guy and such a great conversation. So it's really good to get started on this.
That's cool. A couple of things. One, we've already cut too many nice promos for Oran and Marchand. My head is already hurting. So that's one. Two, the thing is, you know, you are correct. Like, it's podcasting is a lot of work. And I really admire the people who actually have, like, you know, 10 million listens a month or a week or whatever. Patrick obviously does the hard labor for this podcast. I do have to book, and that is endless work In terms of just figuring out what the concept will be, scheduling, et cetera. But the one thing, Austin, and then we'll move on to some sports media topics that I just think is interesting about Sports Business Journal is, you know, when I see the people that you have at your conferences, essentially you could really, you know, the conferences, you guys get major league commissioners, you get owners of teams. So like in theory, like you should, if you specifically, Austin Karp, continue this, there's like no reason to me, you almost couldn't get anybody in sports. Because of the Sports Business Journal brand. And I wonder if you're going to maybe try to go for that, where, I don't know, in 5 weeks from now, maybe you get, Jerry Jones on. I mean, it's not the greatest example. You know what I'm saying, though? But, like, you can get Rob Manfred or people like that.
Well, if Cowboys PR is listening, yes, would love to have Jerry come on the show. Happy to have him come and talk about, whatever he would like to talk about. Football, media, offseason, combine, draft, who he's going to be taking in the first round. I'm sure people would love to know that sort of thing. But SBJ has access to like all levels of sports business. We continue to be the leading publication covering sports business, and it's becoming an increasingly popular space. We've seen some people pop up and try to do what we've been doing for so long. And respect what they're doing, but yeah, we continue to be the industry leaders in doing this. And a lot of people, like you said, team owners, team executives, league executives, all up and down the industry, want to continue to hear what we have to say.
Yeah, everybody knows I'm a longtime admirer of what you guys do. You guys have done just phenomenal work now for decades, and the fact that the sport goes in the front office sports is, or whoever else you want to sort of name in the space, that's a tribute to SBJ. Like that there's a reason.
And I have former colleagues at a lot of those places, so a lot of good talent at those places.
All right, that's the promotional part of this broadcast. So now we'll move on. All right, here's where I want to start, and we'll start in your wheelhouse. Let's start with Daytona. So I saw the Daytona 500, like, not surprisingly, the race dropped pretty significantly, which was going to happen because the race was on a Monday. And obviously, anytime you get a rain delay or anytime you get a cancellation, it's going to have massive impact. What was interesting is, like, I don't know, Austin, if you watched the race, I did. It was really like fascinating, particularly those last couple laps with that massive crash. Was unbelievable.
That big crash at the end was amazing to watch. I mean, it's not great. You never want to see a crash.
Yeah, of course.
But, it makes for good TV.
Thankfully, everybody was healthy. And let me give it a shout out to Fox in terms of like their access when it comes to driver cameras, like inside that car is incredible. Mm-hmm. And like you really like felt like you were inside the car on those crashes. Like some of the imaging that they got was phenomenal. Again, like I like NASCAR. I can't say I watch it every week, but I probably watch it more than I think a lot of people might think. And again, I kudos to them because it was really just unbelievable production. Austin, to me, I just look at this as like honestly a total one off. You're not going to like the headline that like the viewership number was this low, but like literally, I think you point to it all. Just literally because of the change in date. I don't think it says anything about NASCAR. How'd you see it?
No, I mean, you saw that reflected in the uptick in the rights fee they were able to get. That was coming off what was last season was their least watched Cup Series season. Yeah, and they were still able to get a rights fee uptick because it continues to draw, like call it 3 million viewers a race throughout the course of the season. But I mean, just circling back to what you said earlier on the production, yeah, if you were watching Fox, as they were like cleaning off the track during that last crash. And like you said, you saw all those camera angles. I mean, as a casual fan, to see that and just see the access that they have and all the different angles, it was just an incredible production. But I mean, you also need on the ratings front, getting back to that, NASCAR is so unique in that as the Daytona 500 number goes, so goes the season a lot of times. And when you start off the season like this and your biggest race of the season, and Phelps alluded to this when we talked before the race, the president of NASCAR, Steve Phelps, that if they do get moved, you're talking about a 20 to 25% drop or so. And that's what happened. It got moved from Sunday to Monday afternoon, 27% drop. And now you're trying to play catch up the rest of the season. So they're going to have to go week by week and just try to see an uptick here, try to see an uptick there. In the back half of the season, last year, they had the novelty of the first Chicago street race. Yes, it's coming back, but year two on novel races like that, the audience typically drops off a little bit. So where is NASCAR going to be able to make up ground there? Especially coming off what was a record low season last year, it just puts them in a tough spot to begin the season, but still a strong media property, but really sucks to see the Daytona have to move to a Monday like that.
Yeah, always. All right, let's do the NCAA tournament in terms of how you see momentum. The women's tournament could not have better momentum coming in as we tape this late February. Mm-hmm. You know, between Caitlin Clark, obviously just a national phenomenon at this point, LSU, South Carolina, Juju Watkins at USC. Obviously, I have covered the sport, so I'm probably more familiar with it than your average sports fan. But the viewership numbers, Austin, have been phenomenal during the regular season. Obviously, a lot of that is Caitlin Clark. I'd expect that momentum to continue in the NCAA tournament, and I expect them to have a really, really strong viewership tournament. I don't expect them to get the same final number unless Iowa is in it, and I don't think there's a chance Iowa's going to be in the final. So I think you will have a decline there, even though I think that final number will be good. The men, actually, in terms of a viewership story, Austin, are actually maybe even ironically enough more interesting because their issue, in my opinion, is the issue that the college basketball has had now for a little bit, and it's a lack of the public knowing star players. That said, and then I'll send it to you, maybe it doesn't matter because the NCAA tournament in itself, right, is in some ways, it doesn't necessarily matter who the stars are on the tournament. You're watching that because you're into the brackets. You're watching that because you're a gambler. You're watching that for the one and done nature. But I must say, in terms of momentum, women's college basketball has all the momentum right now and men's college basketball does not. How do you see it?
I would agree. I mean, the Caitlin Clark phenomenon has been just incredible for women's basketball this season. You first saw that obviously starting late last season and into the championship game. I mean, there are more women's basketball games drawing over 1 million viewers this regular season than I've ever seen before. And it's more buzz than I can possibly remember. I mean, I think the heyday of Tennessee-UConn rivalry back in the day, that was kind of before I started. But in terms of like one ratings magnet being just moving the needle like this, it's been really fun to watch what Caitlin Clark can do. She's going to be highlighted, I'm guessing, on an ABC window during that opening weekend, wherever Iowa ends up. And yeah, if you're ESPN, you're really hoping that she makes a run and continues to be a draw into the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight and beyond. I don't want to say that the national title game will see a drop because I don't know if Iowa does make a run. Maybe she does get hot and, you know, maybe the team just gels together more around her. Let's see if she's not in, though. Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible record number net last year. And even if LSU makes it back, I can see that seeing a noticeable drop in the number there.
9.9 million for LSU South Carolina. I'm sorry, for LSU Iowa, not LSU South Carolina. If she's not there, it was such an outlier number, like against everything historically. I don't think you can think it's going to come close without her. The real interesting thing will be like, does it draw 6 million? You know what I mean? Does it draw 5 million, which you know this as a viewership guy, would be a phenomenal number compared to what it was even like, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. So I'm with you. I think if she's not in the final.
6 million would be great. 6 million is more than what the Daytona 500 got on Monday.
Exactly.
I think that they would really be happy with that if Caitlin Clark is not there. But if it's LSU South Carolina, I think it's still going to be a respectable type of number.
Yeah, I expect South Carolina to be there. I would be very surprised if not in the final. Okay, so go to the men. What's your thought on the men?
You know, I think there's no one player that's going to draw that. There's no Zion Williamson that, you know, is an eyeball magnet this year. So what they want blue bloods. You want the blue bloods to make it far. And that's not what last year had a record low championship game. You had a UConn versus San Diego State. I mean, that wasn't even the top 100 most watched telecasts of the year, Richard. We're talking about the NCAA basketball championship. That can't happen. So you got to get some blue bloods back in there. You got to get some bigger names. I mean, who's the biggest draw on the men's side you can think of for a player, though? Is it Zach Edey or
maybe? The problem is I don't think there's a singular.
No, and by the way, I agree. I don't think there is.
You know what I mean? Like, this is not to say that there's not great players. Of course, they'll play in the NBA. But you know what I'm saying? There's not a singular a men's college basketball player that I think has captured the public's attention.
No, I would totally agree. So it's going to be very school dependent. You want to see a North Carolina or a Duke or a Kentucky or, I mean, can UConn defend? They're ranked number one in the AP poll right now. There are some really strong blue blood teams that are there. Michigan State is outside the top 25 right now, but they're, you know, they'll probably be in the dance. But do you want to see FAU and you know, San Diego State make it again if you're CBS? You know, probably not. You would probably like to see an uptick there. I mean, the whole tournament was down 7% or so last year. You want to see some of the bigger names make it further.
You do. I mean, what's interesting is like some of the best teams, Austin, like right now, are just not traditional television draws. Houston, right? Yeah. Iowa State.
Purdue. Like, you know, those
Purdue,
are two
Marquette. Yeah, obviously, like, you know, Duke, Carolina, they're, I think they're in the top 10 or the top 11, whatever it is. UConn, obviously, is a is a blue blood team. But, you know, that it's going to be interesting to watch depending on who gets to the finals. And it's probably a pretty good test of, like, is the tournament itself, you know what I mean? Is
the numbers event, are still respectable on the whole.
Yeah, yeah. Is the event itself ultimately, like, strong enough where in some ways it's, like, star player proof? Do you know what I mean?
But if you're, I mean, if you get like Creighton Dayton in your national title game, yeah, I mean, those are really good teams that have the potential to do that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't think you're going to be pushing 15, between 15 and 20 million like you used to. You're going to be thinking, shoot, that could get between 12 and 14 million viewers.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, it's a big thing for CBS and Turner. In they're going to have to try to market it as best as they can. And it's, there's not an easy solution because like you can't, what do you do? Introduce the public to some of these players where, they've never heard of them, you know, prior to the first game, they'll watch them on the first round. It's not easy. This is why NBC historically, when it comes to the Olympics, you know, you're going to watch over the next couple of months, they're going to try to educate you as best they can on who the stars of the Paris games will be. That's sort of what the marketing run-up is.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, real quick, CNBC reporting that Amazon will pay $150 million to televise a wild card playoff game. Obviously, everybody knows the Peacock experiment, well, it's not even experiment, experience, I should say, this year and what they paid. And I think they would say it was a success, although we don't obviously know what the churn rate was. But like this is now, you know, Austin, this we're going to read this headline every year, you know, whether it's Amazon or someone else. And I would not be surprised in short order if we move very quickly to a second postseason game behind a paywall. I'm not a Super Bowl championship game. It's coming behind the paywall. I think we're a long way from that kind of stuff, but would not surprise me next year if an Amazon or somebody else had two of them. What'd you make of the number, the 150 that CNBC reported?
Well, I think that was more in line with what I was thinking as far as an uptick, because it was 110 the year before, and there had been some initial reports that it was only to be 120 million. I was like, that seems really low. So good on Alex Sherman for getting the actual price out there. That a $40 million uptick for that game makes a lot of sense, especially when you saw that you can draw on Peacock. I mean, it obviously includes over-the-air and local markets, but you can draw an audience that was bigger than what NBC had the year before on the broadcast channel. So it's proven out that you can draw a comparable audience for the wild card round. And, you know, as far as sports moving over to streaming with big events like this, it's incremental. And this, and I agree that you're going to see eventually in the next year, 2 years, whatever it is, another wildcard game that is going to be on a streaming platform. It just makes sense. That's where the eyeballs are going. And it, we've shown that the audience numbers can match what linear TV was able to produce for that round.
You know what's interesting, Ben, and this is all from your colleague, Ben Fisher, who's also been on this podcast, is, and Peter King, I think, has wrote about this a little bit too, is to look for the NFL to maybe have a new package where it's essentially like the international rights package, you know what I mean? Like the games that are being played abroad, that's going to come. I don't know when it's going to come, but that's interesting. And I'll be really, really curious if you know, I'm sure somebody will eventually get the price of that. I'll be curious of what the price is on that, because obviously some of those games will be earlier in the morning, but you might get some great teams, you know, in that. You may get like a Chiefs or something like that playing in, just making this up, Germany or Ireland.
Which they did.
Yeah, so they're going to, you know, on top of the adding new revenue sources from the streamers, they're also, I think, going to be able to sell this new package, too, of games to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, never mind that the Chiefs are the best team in football on the field. They have made incredible strides off the field in trying to open up that NFL International Markets program. They've done it in Germany, and now more teams are finally seeing the advantage of, you know, that's how they're going to grow their fan base. That's how they're going to grow their bottom line, is opening up American football fandom to these different markets. Okay, we have Brazil. I mean, that a Brazil game lines up incredibly well because you can put it in prime time.
Exactly.
The time
Great
zones
time.
Match yep. up. But those Sunday morning games, when they're on NFL Network even, are drawing between, you know, 5 and 10 million viewers. That I think the Germany game with the Chiefs was closer to 10 million viewers, just under that. So there is an audience there. It has the window to itself. Yeah, it cuts into some of the pregame action. You got to wake up in the morning and, you know, especially if you're on the West Coast, I hope you're setting your fantasy lineup the night before. But there is a window for that. Their fans will watch in pretty respectable numbers.
Yeah, listen, 8 million, that's a low Amazon game on Thursday night, right?
So there's a package there to be sold.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right. Final one. We'll keep this fairly short. Do you have any broad thoughts on the EA Sports new college football game, which will include some, looks like, prominent broadcasters, but also the name, image, and likeness money to the players, which I think looks at this point like maybe $600 or something to that effect, and also a copy of the game. I mean, I say this seriously, but, you know, also I say this incredibly sarcastic. I think EA Sports should pay all these college football players the exact same amount they pay the ESPN broadcasters. Let's make this even. You know, of course, they're not going to. But how do you see this? Because, like, this is, I don't know, I saw that story and it's pretty interesting to me because I think that game is going to be immensely popular. Because, you know, you grew up in a college football community. I didn't in New York, but obviously I understand the popularity of college football. This strikes me. People have been clamoring for this game, right? And it seems like it's going to be a can't-miss hit.
When NIL started, this was the first thing everybody had in their mind. This is what everyone wanted, this situation. And now the players are going to be getting paid. I think it's going to be great. I've always been a fan of EA's football games from college and Madden. Like, it's what I played when I was younger. And like you said, like, in the South, it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge for Alabama fans. You're going to be able to play that game again. And there's just this built up, you know, people want to play. They haven't been able to play in years. So that also has to do with it. And I think it's just a win for the players. I think it's a win for fans. Heck, I mean, I got kids that are coming of video game age, and I'd rather be playing this with them than watching them play Call of Duty, to be quite honest. So I'm going to lean into it, you know, as far as, you know, being a father and wanting to play a video game with my kids. And I see it as nothing but a positive for the athletes and for the sports business.
All right, that's interesting. And I will be paying attention. And normally I'm not a gamer, but I will be paying attention to the sales of this one. Because I'm just kind of curious. And then I guess in theory, Austin, like if I project this out, this would be the model, right? If the EA Sports is of the world then decided to do this with other sports, right? Like I actually don't know this. Is there a college basketball equivalent of this?
You know, I'm not sure, but nothing comes to mind thinking about that.
But you, like, logically, like, there would be a market for that. Both, and, you know, you obviously have men's and women's, and you know you can play, you can pick whatever your favorite team is. You know, like, for this year, if, like, women's basketball had a game, and you're like, yeah, you know, you could play Caitlin Clark or something like that. You know what I mean? Versus like UConn or something, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and you've been able to do it in the soccer game, I think, but I think you've been able to play NWSL players and teams for the first time in recent years. So there would be a market to include women's players for sure.
I do have kids who have FIFA, so I'm a little more familiar with the soccer.
Can't call it FIFA anymore. They got rid of that license. Just EAFC.
Yeah, you're right. Excellent point. By the way, you know, I happen to, you'll appreciate this, just because it's sort of a business story. So the MLS season starts, right? Obviously starts as we're taping this, essentially. And Inter Miami obviously is the hot team in MLS, and everybody's interested in seeing Messi. And when that team comes to a town, the Messi's first appearance in Toronto is the last game of the year, which if Inter Miami is, like, you know, by then, like, has clinched a playoff spot, and it's like, you know, October, really starting to get a little cold in Toronto, I see no chance the man from Argentina makes it across the border.
I mean, if you're a fan, and if you're especially a knowledgeable fan, you got to...
It's buyer beware. I don't know.
It's buyer beware. Yeah, it's caveat emptor. You got to understand it's the end of the season. It's the playoffs. like if you're an NBA fan, you kind of understand load management at this point. If LeBron's coming to your town, if KD's coming, like there's a chance they may not play. So, you know, you just got to go into it knowing that that may be part of the experience.
And by the way, I mean, we're taping this early. Good job by Kevin Durant showing patience with those idiotic fans who, one called him a bitch and then two, wanted to chat with him. I mean, the fucking just the height of anyway.
It sucks. Right, those are the best seats, some of the best seats in sports, if not the best seats in sports. The court side seats at an NBA game.
Good for KD. Said the fans shouldn't have been run. If it was my organization, I'm running those guys. They're not coming back.
But yeah, you have no right to do that. You know, come enjoy the game like you were sitting in anywhere else in the stands. Just because you're on the floor, it doesn't give you a right to be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. All right, awesome. We've ended this podcast in agreement, which I love. Austin Karp is the Sports Business Journal managing editor / digital. Also, check out the sports media podcast that SBJ puts out. Austin just had a really good conversation with Taylor Twellman, who's been on this podcast. Always an excellent guest. Highly recommend it if you got a podcast and you're interested in soccer. Bring Taylor on. And again, I would expect Sports Business Journal, as they move into the post-Oran Marchand era, to get some great guests. I would imagine, Austin, you'll eventually have other staffers join with you, whether it's the aforementioned Ben Fisher and others. You got some people who've been on this podcast and who've been excellent guests. So it's not like you lack for audio talent. All right, we thank Austin Karp obviously for his insight and his time. If you like this podcast, obviously head to the archives and check out our latest stuff. Sue Bird preceded Austin. Five gold medals between Sue Bird and Austin Karp when it comes to the Olympics. Director Kristen Lapis, one of the great sports documentary directors. She just did the Giannis doc that Amazon did. Alex Sherman, CNBC, I think we mentioned him on this podcast, was on this podcast in February. So was Kenny Smith, and so was Noah Eagle. I'm just giving you my guest list, Austin, so you can sort of compare it and see who you guys can have on.
I can only try and emulate Richard.
go aim higher. So again, if you like this, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice note. That's how this podcast continues. Do the same for the SBJ one. Comments have impact. People do look at the comments. People look at the stars, and if they might give it a sampling if they've never tried it before. Thanks, as always, to Patrick Antonetti for his hard work. Thank you to everybody at Odyssey for their support. Most of all, thank you for listening. We'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.